WHD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, sponsored by Staples.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. A new headache for the president's son. Last night, a federal grand jury in California indicted Hunter Biden on 9 counts of evading taxes. He's accused of skipping out on more than $1 million to finance a lavish lifestyle. Loyola University Law's Lori Levinson says it will have reverberations.
Even though the indictment does not refer to President Joe Biden, it will undoubtedly be fodder for his political enemies, including those in Congress who have wanted to investigate Hunter Biden, the business of Burisma, the contact with China, and the failure to pay taxes.
We've learned the 3 people shot to death at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas this week were all professors at the business school there. The shooter, a former instructor who'd been turned down for a job at UNLV. CBS's Omar Villafranca is in Las Vegas.
Some students that we talked to and told our producing crews here that they were willing to talk, but they didn't want to come back on campus yet. There's still that trepidation and that fear after such a traumatic event.
The gunman was killed in a shootout with police. Secretary of State Antony Blinken speaking out about civilian casualties in the Israel-Hamas war.
It is imperative. It remains imperative that Israel put a premium on civilian protection.
War enters its 3rd month today. The UN says its aid operation is in tatters because there is no remaining safe space in Gaza. A major donor threatening to withdraw a pricey gift to an Ivy League college.
The threat came after University of Pennsylvania President Liz McGill's response when asked if calling for the genocide of Jews constitutes bullying or harassment.
If it is directed and severe or pervasive, it is harassment.
So the answer is yes.
It is a context-dependent decision.
That exchange came during a congressional hearing. The Wall Street Journal reports that Stone Ridge Holdings Group head Ross Stevens says he'll pull $100 million of the company's shares out of the school if McGill isn't replaced. No comment from the school. Peter King, CBS News.
No big surprise in Russia, where Vladimir Putin says he's running for president again in hopes of serving another 6 years. Putin's all but assured of a win after almost a quarter of a century in power. They're saying goodbye in County Tipperary today. Funeral service is being held for the Pogue Shane McGowan in Nina, where he spent summers as a boy. Fans are crowded in.
It's a sort of a national institution, you know, and he really kind of captured something about that experience of being betwixt and between, being Irish and English.
McGowan died last week at the age of 65. S&P futures down 6. This is CBS News.
Staples stores provide innovative products and services for small business, remote workers and learners, even teachers and parents. Explore more at your local Staples store.
Wendy's peppermint.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wegehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Both the Ice Age and North Country National Scenic Trails in Wisconsin are being designated parks under the National Park System. The Ice Age Trail is around 1,200 miles long, running from Polk County to Door County. The North Country National Scenic Trail is around 4,800 miles and crosses through 8 states. Senator Tammy Baldwin has been calling for the designation for nearly a decade, and Thursday's announcement drew bipartisan support. Republican banking mogul Eric Hovde will challenge U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin. That's what National Republican Senatorial Committee Chair Steve Daines tells the Journal Sentinel. Hovde himself declined a chance to comment Wednesday night. Hovde is widely considered the most viable of the Republicans in the race. I'm Nate Wegehout, Civic Media News.
Bucks leaving Las Vegas. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The NBA's first in-season tournament will not include Milwaukee. The Bucks losing to the Pacers, 128-119. The Pacers will advance to the final round, 7:30 tomorrow night. How can the Bucks cut down their second-half penalties? Giannis Antetokounmpo.
You know, get open, you know, drive the ball, make something happen. And, you know, we've done that in the past. Today, I don't think we did it as well. But at the end of the day, like, we have to be better down the stretch. Like, we got to know what we're trying to accomplish down the stretch. I feel like something sometimes we wasn't on the same page.
NFL, the Packers getting ready for Monday Night Football against the New York Giants. Running back Aaron Jones on the practice field. Limited, but back just a few weeks after getting that cart ride for a sprained MCL. I asked Jordan Love how this team has gone from a four-game losing streak to winning four of their last five games.
Yeah, it's done a lot, obviously. Just to get rolling and get back on a win streak right now has been huge just for the team. For myself.
That's Packers quarterback Jordan Love. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, mostly sunny with a high of 50. Tonight, slight chance of rain, a low of 33. Some rain, maybe some snow mixed in for Saturday, highs around 37. Saturday night, partly cloudy, 22. Sunday, mostly sunny and a high near 31. That's weather from Sevier Studios.
It's 39 at our studios.
Did you know this local radio station is part of Civic Media? Learn more about the entire network at civicmedia.us. Step on up and enjoy what's on tap today. Local talk about the valley and all of Wisconsin. In fact, it's on tap every day. This is 93.5 The Tap. UK.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Back with you at 7:06, live from Lake Wissota across the Civic Media Radio Network on this Friday morning, December 8th. It's actually our last live Friday morning show for 2023. My extended holiday break will begin after next week, Thursday's show. So some of our usual Friday regulars will be back in 2024 when we're going to have a lot to talk about. It's going to be a busy year. I know I'm already working on our newsletter articles for the first week of January. They include letting people know about the four different election dates in 2024. You've got your February primary, your April general, which is also the presidential primary. You'll have an August primary for the November general election, which includes president, U.S. Senate, whoever ends up running against Tammy Baldwin, legislature, Congress, and more. We spoke in our last hour about, as you heard in the news just now, banking mogul Eric Hovde, which was not my phrasing. I first saw it in the article in the Journal Sentinel by Lawrence Andrea. And so banking mogul Eric Hovde, I think, is the title that he's going to have for a while as he contemplates a final decision on running against Tammy Baldwin. Coming up later this hour, we'll begin a segment with the words of President Franklin Roosevelt when he says yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. It was part of a speech he gave to Congress 82 years ago today when describing the attack on Pearl Harbor. We will revisit our conversation earlier this year with author John Kinville, who wrote a book about a young man whose path took him from growing up in Chippewa Falls during the Depression to a Navy career and his time on the battleship California on that fateful day in Pearl Harbor. And through a series of letters, we get an intimate look at life in those months prior to the attack. And John Kinville wrote just a wonderful book about it. I would strongly recommend you heading over to johnkinville.com. That's John, J-O-H-N. Kinville is K-I-N-V-I-L-L-E, johnkinville.com, and picking up a copy of his book about World War II hero Harry Kramer. Along the way, if you'd like to join us, our number here is 844-967-2789. Call it, text it, use the Civic Media app along the way as well. And if you have a comment and you're watching on live on Facebook, leave it there. We may put it on screen as well. As we're looking at headlines here, the one that caught my eye most, and that, again, I will probably be making a bigger deal about this than most other news media sites because they'll chalk it up to politics as usual. But it is, again, a case of
of power politics or power trip, or I would argue a corrupt use of power, that is leading state Senate Republicans to again either unseat, not fail to seat, or even unseat members of the University of Wisconsin Hospital Board. The Republicans who control the state Senate Health Committee voted on Thursday against the nomination of a former member of the legislature from Dane County and also a longtime nursing union leader to posts on the hospital board after they were questioned by Republican senators about their views on abortion policy. That sets up the stage for the full Republican-led Senate to reject or approve three appointees to the UW Hospital Board, formerly known as the UW Hospital and Clinics Authority. Much of this information comes from an article in the Wisconsin State Journal by Alexander Schur that you should be a subscriber to. As you have heard by now, because of a quirk in how the confirmation process works in the Wisconsin legislature, if the Senate were to reject a nomination this long after they've been appointed and have already started doing the work, it is tantamount to firing that person, which is not what the confirmation process is supposed to be about. Again, when more honorable people are again leading the Wisconsin legislature, job one needs to be fixing that loophole, a loophole that existed for generations, but was not abused until Republicans took power and Governor Tony Evers was elected. That there have been people who have been doing their job for years after being appointed without Senate confirmation, because instead of simply appointing them and saying, you're the governor, you get to appoint who you want, we will turn down the appointment if there's something nefarious, you know, that you shouldn't be in that job in the first place. Rather than, well, you go ahead and do the job. You're qualified to do the job. But if we don't like you, then we'll take up your nomination and then we'll fire you. And that's how this process has been abused by Republicans for these past 4+ years. So this comes after Republican members of the committee talked to former Lieutenant Governor Barbara Lawton, former State Representative Sandy Pope, and Candace Owley, the Wisconsin Federation of Nurses and Health Professionals former president. And they were asked about whether the UW Hospital Board would spend state funds on abortion, even though that would be in violation of law. And it's something that has not been an issue at the UW Hospital Board for something like a decade. And yet Republicans on the committee voted against the appointees because they, as Andre Jacques, Republican from DePeer, said he feared they would disregard state laws that conflict with their ideology. The questioning, the article says, at two separate October public hearings, focused on a UW health plan to offer second trimester abortions more than 10 years ago that never came to fruition because of widespread opposition. And yet, Andre Jacques and others questioned whether the Evers appointees would support a similar plan in the future. In other words, a hypothetical. Not about how they would manage the UW Hospital Board right now with patients who are sick right now with a pandemic that, you know, has been going on, but basically playing politics with a hypothetical question about abortion that was resolved about 10 years ago. That's where we are in the Wisconsin State Capitol right now. And of course, you had people like Sandy Pope saying that there's no reason to hold her accountable for things that happened before she was on the hospital board. And as she added, the hospital board follows the law. Owley said she wasn't knowledgeable about the plan from 10 years ago, but also said the board would comply with the law. But Republicans making up concerns about abortion hypotheticals are leading them in committee to vote against their nomination and to set up the full Senate Republicans to say, either you're fired or you cannot sit on the board for no valid reason whatsoever. It is, again, corrupt power politics at its worst when you abuse a confirmation system in this way. Tony Evers won the election, and then he won re-election. He is the person Wisconsin voters chose. And yet, a handful of legislators have taken it upon themselves to try to veto the executive branch and, in essence, undermine the will of Wisconsin voters. You can do that when the maps are that gerrymandered. And that's one reason why you may see a change when the Wisconsin Supreme Court finally considers these rigged maps. Temperatures at 7:15 across Wisconsin look like this. It is 39 degrees up here on Lake Wissota, 40 degrees in Hayward. Park Falls is at 38. Wausau is at 35 right now. Green Bay is at 41. La Crosse, 45. Wisconsin Rapids, 43. Oshkosh is at 43. Madison, 44. And Waukesha, 41. So nice to have temperatures in the upper 30s and 40s. As we head into a December weekend, meteorologist Jennifer Vucicki from Weatherology joins us now to talk about how long this may last as we head into this December weekend. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, well, it is unseasonably warm here for this time of the year, as you've been mentioning. Those temperatures this morning already above the where we should be for afternoon highs for this time of the year. Sunshine expected for, today from Oshkosh down to Madison and over towards Milwaukee. Cloudier, becoming mostly cloudy for everyone else. Warmer for nearly everyone today compared to yesterday as that warm front fully pushes through. Though a cold front directly behind that system starts to come in for west central Wisconsin, so starting to cool around Amory and Baldwin today. Highs in the mid to low 50s from Oshkosh and everyone southward, mid to upper 40s for central and west central Wisconsin. Again, as that cold front starts to come in, so a little bit cooler there. It does look like a chance for some rain coming in late tonight from Wausau through southern Wisconsin. Saturday, a chance for some rain in the morning hours from Milwaukee to Richland Center and over towards Oshkosh. A slight chance for rain and snow mixing around Wausau and Wisconsin Rapids. And a chance for some snow Saturday afternoon around Amory and Baldwin. A drop in temperatures tomorrow as that cold front really comes in for everyone. Mid to upper 40s for the southern half of the state. Mid to upper 30s for central and west central Wisconsin. Sunday, even cooler overall as that cold front fully pushes through. Mid to low 30s primarily. Again, the coolest spots around Amory and Baldwin with highs in the upper 20s there, which will be slightly below average for this time of the year. Looks like sunshine for most though on Sunday with a little bit more cloud cover around central Wisconsin. Then by Monday, slightly warmer overall as a quick warm front pushes through. Mid to upper 30s across the board with sunshine for all to start out the new work week.
All right, Jennifer, thank you so much. We appreciate it. It's Jennifer Vucicki from Weatherology joining us. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thanks so much, you too.
All right. Greg, as I was looking at the weather and trying to figure out ways to counter blessings on this, besides it being in the 40s and 50s at a time.
Yeah.
Have you seen how this so-called Pineapple Express is just bringing all this rain, a river of rain to the Pacific Northwest?
No.
And it's just, I mean, the floods are terrible. And I'm just wondering what it would take for that little shift to suddenly just bring us, because we have virtually no snow out there in many places of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, okay, now the temperature's going to get a little cooler. How much longer until that thing shifts and we start, shoveling, and we're not doing it yet. I know Thanksgiving was a couple of weeks back. I'm so thankful right now.
I told my wife like twice now, I'm like, I'm buying a snowblower. And I'm like, not yet.
Oh, I'm going to wait for it to snow and the prices will double. Yes, yeah. That's a great strategy.
I'm smart, Pat.
Hey, and in breaking news, I don't know if you caught it at the top of the hour, Vladimir Putin running for re-election. I like his odds. It's something, there's a reason Trump admires him. None of that pesky, democracy stuff. So
he's a winner.
Good luck to him in the coming campaign. We'll have more coming up in just a bit. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Friday morning, when you're here, you're up north. Back in a bit.
You're listening to 93.5, The Tap.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Timeout.
All right.
Hey, remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
93.5 The Tap. K.
Sammy Davis Jr. would have been 98 years old today. This was a song that was a remake of what was in the original Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory movie in 1971. Sammy Davis Jr. Did a remake of the song in 1972, and he immediately hated it. He said it was dreadful, that it was, you know, going to ruin his reputation, and instead everybody loves it. It was his only number one hit, and it's the one we play after all these years later. So, you know, sometimes the things that you think aren't going to work out well for you work out just fine. All right, we're not going to spend a lot of time on Hunter Biden here, other than to say that, yes, it's certainly been a big media story since it was announced that there would be 9 new tax charges filed against President Joe Biden's son, and that the timing is, shall we say, not optimal for the election. But I do want to point out again that in many cases, Hunter Biden has paid back taxes that he may have owed, that these are charges that, were he not the son of a president, probably would not have even been filed, and that at no point has the president criticized the charges in a way that could come off as, you know, trying to pressure the Department of Justice, trying to pressure the IRS. Nobody's been, you know, threatened with jail the way, say, a Donald Trump would in this case. You know, basically, his defense attorney, Abby Lowell, accused the court of bowing to pressure and said, based on the facts and the law, if Hunter's last name was anything other than Biden, the charges in Delaware and now California would not have been brought. And again, the White House declined to comment, instead referred questions to the Justice Department or Biden's lawyers. Not the kind of thing that you would see if these charges were brought against Donald Jr. or Eric or any of the other Trump kids. It's simply a double standard that continues to exist. It's more fodder for Congressman James Comer of the House Oversight Committee to again try to go looking for things that either have no relevance to Joe Biden, or things that aren't even there, or things like back taxes that have already been paid back. But such is the way that the media wants to treat something like this, when on the other hand, you have a former president currently on trial who could lose his business licenses in New York for millions upon millions of dollars in business fraud. And again, I promise you, if this weren't Donald Trump as part of a business fraud trial, if this had been Jimmy Carter's peanut farm, if this had been Barack Obama committing some kind of a business fraud with his book dealings or something, this trial would be covered nonstop. And instead, I bet a lot of you are not even aware there was a trial, and certainly aren't aware of any day-to-day in-depth coverage of it. Because it's just what we expect now. It's what Donald Trump, it's what he does. That's how he runs his business. So of course, he's going to be corrupt, not pay his taxes, inflate the value of his assets to get loans, deflate the value of his assets when it comes time to pay taxes. And yet we shrug it all off in a way that we would never do for anybody else, and certainly not from a political side of the aisle that does a little bit better job of following the rules. At no point has anybody said Hunter Biden should not be charged if he's committed any kinds of crimes. It's the inflation of the attention on it that is what I'm bringing up here. Hunter Biden, not a role model. If you're Joe Biden, first off, you love your son. You love him unconditionally. But you've watched him make a lifetime of bad decisions and the impact that it's had on your life, not just your political life, but your personal life, because it's a son that you love, but he continues to make bad decisions, many of his own volition, others, let's just say, you know, addiction is hell. And addiction makes you do things you never would have done beforehand. But at every point along the way, that president, that father has stood by his son, despite the attention and despite the personal emotional toll and despite the political cost. And that's fine. That's all fair game. Hunter Biden did what he did. But let's not forget where there are some double standards at play, how these charges would or would not have come out if his father weren't the president, and how these charges are covered versus what is demonstrably exponentially worse in terms of business fraud from a former president of the United States. Hey, if you've been following the NBA Cup, good news. You don't have to follow it anymore. Congratulations, Greg. I know you were following it closely. The NBA Cup was all that. You can go back to worrying about the regular season again. The tournament, our long national nightmare of caring about the NBA Cup, is over as the Bucks lose to the Indiana Pacers.
Hey, Pat.
Yeah?
Are you being sarcastic right now?
Me? Here's the thing. I sent a note to Joe Zepecki last night.
Yeah.
Good friend. Mm-hmm. Because Joe was the first one when everybody else was all about, hey, Damian Lillard, it's going to be great. Can't wait to have him in here. It's going to be great. And Joe Zepecki was the very first one to say, I don't know. You get rid of Jrue Holiday, who is a monster on defense. And yeah, Damian Lillard can score, but what's going to happen with our defense? And remember the other night, the Bucks scored 146 against the Knicks, but they gave up 122. And last night, they gave up 128, and they only scored 119. And so the Indiana Pacers move on to play the Lakers. But I sent the note to Joe Zepecki, because Dan Schaefer, you know, again, good friend of the show here, but he was very excited about the trade.
Yeah.
And Joe Zepecki less so with these defensive concerns. And Joe said, I'm not going to say anything for like the first 30 games of the season. We're going to let things settle in. We're going to let things gel. And I sent the note to Joe last night going, okay, I think we've reached the point. You can go ahead and say I told you so on this, because that may be the story throughout the rest of the season here.
I don't know. I feel like if they were losing 140 to 95, maybe, but like teams have, I mean, like, I don't know. I think, I mean, to me,
I guess
it just doesn't make sense to start looking for oh no's, because the season is still pretty fresh.
Well, here's the thing. It's easier to constantly give up 120 points than it is to consistently score 130 or 140.
Yeah.
It's easy to give up the points. It's offense. You know, can you really give that output night after night after night? That's the question here. And I'm just saying at this point, it's a valid question.
Oh no, I totally understand that, but also we got to give them, I mean, they're all new players to each other and new coach and you know, this might not be their season. Maybe it's next season when the team really gels. I mean, that's the thing. It's like people are, that's the big problem I have. Everyone's like, that's it, we're going to win now. And like, no, we're not going to, there's no guarantee.
Oh no. We are in such a transition year now in Wisconsin sports with the Packers the same way, Badger football the same way,
the Brewers
Badger volleyball. That's another thing, man. These ladies are on the march.
They are.
They defeated Penn State and they take on Oregon in the regional final at the Fieldhouse tomorrow at 7 p.m. All right, our interview from earlier this year with John Kinville about Pearl Harbor is next. You're up north.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
CBS News Brief. A new federal indictment against Hunter Biden. CBS News legal contributor Jessica Levinson.
The indictment alleges that Hunter Biden knew exactly what he was doing, that instead of paying his taxes, he paid for a lavish lifestyle.
President's son accused of stiffing the IRS of more than $1 million. There's been no comment from the White House. As the Israel-Hamas war enters its third month today, Secretary of State Antony Blinken's made his strongest comments yet on casualties in Gaza.
There does remain a gap between exactly what I said when I was there, the intent to protect civilians, and the actual results that we're seeing on the ground.
Hamas still holding 130 hostages. A not-so-surprising announcement from Vladimir Putin at a medal ceremony for Russian soldiers.
Время не властно над памятью народа.
He says he'll run for a new six-year term for president. CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
Your hometown radio refreshed. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wegehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin will spend $6 million to provide free driver's education classes to 15,000 teenagers. The goal is to cut down on reckless driving. It's the first time Wisconsin has spent money on driver's education since 2004. Students who get free or reduced meals at school would qualify. It's one of dozens of bills Governor Evers signed into law Wednesday. Wisconsin is getting $2.5 million to study new Amtrak service in Madison, Green Bay, and Eau Claire that would connect with Milwaukee, Chicago, and the Twin Cities. Wisconsin is also getting federal grants to support studying expanded service between Milwaukee and Chicago on the existing Hiawatha line, as well as adding a third daily round trip between Chicago, Milwaukee, and the Twin Cities through Wisconsin. I'm Nate Wegehout, Civic Media News.
I was proud to be a soldier.
I told the truth and got kicked out.
And so I thought to myself, I'm taking this rule down.
If you're an LGBTQ plus veteran, your memories are important too. Share your story with the Library of Congress Veterans History Project, where firsthand accounts from U.S. military veterans are preserved and made accessible for researchers and future generations. Visit loc.gov/vets to submit your stories, photographs, and documents today.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, mostly sunny with a high of 50. Tonight, slight chance of rain, a low of 33. Some rain, maybe some snow mixed in for Saturday, highs around 37. Saturday night, partly cloudy, 22. Sunday, mostly sunny and a high near 31. That's weather from Severe Studios.
Right now, it's 37.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
You're listening to 93.5, The Tap.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Think you'd like working with us at Civic Media? We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. If you have the right skills to join our team, let's talk. Civic Media is a proud equal opportunity employer committed to diversity and inclusion, along with the growth and development of all current and future employees. If you're interested or are part of an organization who wants to know more, go to our website, civicmedia.us, and click on the Careers tab.
From Lake Wissota State Park and the Pablo Center, the entire Chippewa Valley is tapping in to the station talking about your hometown. 93.5, The Tap, UK.
Yesterday,
December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
When President Franklin Roosevelt delivered those remarks the following day to Congress, the American people were not fully aware of the extent of damage done or the lives lost. Four battleships sunk, four others severely damaged, more than 150 aircraft destroyed and just as many damaged, about a dozen other ships damaged. The U.S. fleet was crippled and 2,400 Americans were dead. Among them, Chippewa Falls native Harry Kramer, serving on the battleship California. His passing was marked here in Chippewa Falls, of course, but over the years, as people moved away or passed away, Harry Kramer was all but forgotten until Chi High teacher John Kinville and others took on a project that led to a discovery that allowed him to tell us all about Harry's life so that we don't just see a great big number on a death toll. We see each as an individual life with a history, with challenges and dreams, but not the future that they'd imagined. Here's our conversation with author John Kinville from last April 25th. You're a teacher at Chippewa Falls High School.
Correct.
How did you go from being a teacher at Chippewa Falls to working to learn more about, you know, past Chippewa Falls students, you know, and who have passed away, and then have that go into a book? It sounds like the first step was that you learned about or started Flags for the Fallen.
Yeah. So I teach American government, Pat, to high school students. And as I've gone through my career, I wanted to look for something that would bring people together, bring students together, bring communities together. And oftentimes our government, our society can be very divided. And I've always had an interest in the military. And when I was in high school, I wanted to join the Air Force. And due to childhood asthma issues, I was not able to fulfill that dream. So I went into public service to be a teacher. So in 2009, a colleague and I decided to create this organization here at the school. It's voluntary. We don't get paid a dime. It's called Flags for the Fallen. And we had noticed that our school did not have a tribute to veterans or fallen veterans. And so we wanted to identify who are the servicemen and women who have died in the various wars from our high school here in Chippewa Falls. And so currently we have a list of 41 that died from our school, going back from the Civil War all the way to the War on Terrorism. And Harry W. Kramer was one of those 41. And so our club has been, and again, these are students who volunteer, but they volunteer their time to research who these men are, do the genealogy, and try to reach out to surviving descendants. And one of the soldiers who really piqued an interest with myself and the students was Harry W. Kramer, because he served in the Navy pre-World War II, and he lost his life on the USS California battleship as part of the December 7th, 1941 attack at Pearl Harbor. And so we were able to do some genealogy. We found some of his surviving descendants, including his niece Evelyn. And Evelyn was gracious enough to drive up from La Crosse to meet with me and the students. And she had this box, and it was a box filled with everything that the family had on Harry Kramer. But what was interesting was that none of the surviving nieces and nephews, they didn't really know much about Harry, because his death had created such a tragic ripple effect that it just became easier to not talk about him. So his parents didn't talk about him. His brother didn't talk about him. His brother's wife didn't talk about him. And so the nieces and nephews, they knew that Uncle Harry was this person, but they didn't know much about him. And so Now, Flags to the Fallen, we then research these soldiers, and then we try to travel to places that are connected with their service and sacrifice. So twice now, I've taken students to Pearl Harbor, and we've gone to the naval base, we've gone to the museums, and also we have gone to the National Memorial Cemetery of the Pacific, otherwise known as the Punch Bowl, where Harry is buried. And so twice I've taken students there, and I actually have a group of 54, a whole bus. We're going back again to see Harry next summer, so summer of 2024. But it's been quite a ride, Pat, quite a ride.
Oh, I can scarcely imagine when I finished the book, and well before I finished the book, you know, what came to me was the fact that this was somebody who, in essence, in that metaphorical sense, you know, not the literal sense, you brought him back to life. You brought his life back because of that box of mementos, which included, was it 32 or 33 letters that are in there that he had written or had gone back and forth, which is really the foundation of the book. Is you start with these letters, but then you woven between them is your text about, you know, what was going on in the news. What would they have been reading about in the Chippewa Herald Telegram at the time?
But I can
scarcely imagine what it was like to read the letters in that box and to realize that this was an actual life, not just some name on a plaque, you know, but an actual life that you could tell people about.
You know, when I contacted the publisher with the idea, they said, you know, John, people love to read about Patton. They love to read about Eisenhower, but they may not be willing to read about an individual sailor from Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, who, oh, by the way, was the first Chippewa County casualty in what would become World War II. And I told the publisher, I said, you know, I disagree with you a little bit, and here is my plan. The plan was, let's take the letters, they serve as the foundation, as you pointed out, and let's try to take him as a microcosm, a case study, if you will, and let's try to piece together the start to World War II from the perspectives of multiple stakeholders simultaneously. So we've got Harry, Harry's letters. He's going through the Navy. He's going aboard a battleship. He's becoming a very trusted member of the battleship crew on the California. And then you have his parents who are back home in Chippewa Falls, like so many parents back in Wisconsin, who are reading the daily drip of newspaper headlines in this obvious, this really obvious march to war that people just don't want to admit is happening.
No, and there's not, on top of that, this is still, the Depression is still going full bore, and Harry's father has been going, you know, from job to job. Things have not gone, you know, especially well for him. Harry decides his best path forward in this Depression era, while there are rumblings of, you know, war in Europe, is to seek a career in the U.S. Navy. And I don't want to give too much of the book away, but basically he signs up. They, you know, they all gather for Harry. They wish him well. And then you see these series of letters about hoping to come back home at some point, but he's joined the Navy. They've shipped him right out to California because, yep, you know, there's basically the ramp up to possible war. The preparations are there, even as the nation, like I said, in your narrative is like, hey, let's do everything possible to stay out of this, all going in the crux of this 1940 presidential election with Franklin Roosevelt running for an unprecedented third term. There's a lot to digest there for a young man, much less his parents.
Yeah, you know, 100%, Pat. And there's so many subplots within this book. I mean, you've got Harry, you've got his parents, you've got his brother and that relationship. And then you've got, like you said, the national politics. What I did was I read the Chippewa Herald and the Leader Telegram daily between this and from 1919 all the way to 1949, I think it was. So I tried to encapsulate everything that's happening And as all these different subplots are ultimately colliding on December 7th, 1941, Harry is allowed to join the service.
And so he does. He goes through everything that's basic. You get these letters. And again, no internet here. So sometimes there's a large gap between the letters where he has to fill things in. And by the way, it's not all serious. It's not all war. It's not all news. There's very much a social component to Harry's life. This kid from Depression era Chippewa Falls and living life on some very positive terms in Hawaii before the dark days of war.
You know, Harry was a good boy. He's like so many of our up north men and women who are joining the military. They come from good families. They're very stable. And they want to do the right thing. And Harry has an appetite for life. And being in the Depression, you know, food is a tough commodity to get a hold of. And one of the things, and Pat, you read this, that he just loves all the food he gets to eat in the Navy.
The pineapple, for example.
Yes. And he discovered what I discovered, that they send all the junk pineapple to the mainland and they keep right. the good stuff for themselves. Mm-hmm. But he's having a blast. And back then, as it is today, but being stationed at Pearl Harbor was the creme de la creme. And part of that was sort of some built-in arrogance in the military that Pearl Harbor was immune to any type of a military attack because of its placement so far away from, we'll call it, the troubles in Japan. And so everybody's having a good time. And within this, though, Harry's also a very good boy. He's not getting involved with maybe the drunkenness that a lot of young men are prone to get involved in. He's not a party guy. He's very religiously devout. He loves to go to the different churches that are part of his faith when he goes to different leaves. He's a very studious young man. And as he takes his tests to achieve different ranks as a fireman within the ship, he's one of the highest scorers on the ship. They're sort of competing in different departments on the ship as to where he gets to go, because all of these officers want him to work as part of their crew. And so he's just exactly what you want to see.
And make sure that because he is getting these bumps in pay, you know, getting a $5 bump in pay per month is a big deal in 1940, 1941. And so then being able to help, you know, his parents, who again are still coping with the Depression. And so now let's go all the way in the other direction. We've talked about the Civil War, Harry Kramer and World War II. And now you're working with students today who obviously now they have some experience with the war on terrorism and what we're going through today. But what do you think they're getting out of this, learning about Harry Kramer and the others whose lives were lost for their country, who were born and raised in Chippewa Falls? What are they going to get out of it by going to Pearl Harbor, by seeing Harry's grave, and by reading your book?
Well, first of all, I've had a lot of students end up joining the armed services. And so that's been unexpected. I mean, there's no advertising pitch, but I think what these students are really gaining from it, just from my observations, is they do want a connection to our country. You know, I'm a hopeless romantic when it comes to the United States. And you can see behind me, I've got George Washington's my favorite figure. So I've got George Washington everywhere. And I love this country. And what I've always been drawn to with the military is that there's something very selfless, very honorable, and maybe the most selfless and most honorable than to either enlist and to donate your time to your country and to risk life and limb, but also if your country drafts you and the fact that you would still go through the motions when your country needs you. And so to me, I've always been drawn to it because it really speaks to the best of who we are and what our country can be. And so people like Harry, at the end of the day, it in the military, it doesn't matter what your religion is to a great extent. It doesn't matter what your background is. It's a matter of you're part of the fighting force. And of course, on Pearl Harbor, you know, there's 2,403 enlisted and civilian deaths. And it galvanizes a country in a way that very few things have. And of course, we have that with 9/11 in my generation. So for me, with the students, a lot of it has to do with just letting them know that not everything has to be divisive, that not everything has to be an argument, that there are larger beliefs and values that unite us as Americans. And I've always believed that those who have died for this country can serve as a grounding point for all of us, just to remember what those basic values that bring us together as countrymen.
You can get the book at johnkinville.com. Back after this, you're up north.
...93.5, The Tap.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here. I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
OptUS Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
Going to forego the usual Grateful Dead. Dan Schumacher joining us now to, again, remember this day in 1980 when John Lennon was murdered outside the Dakota in New York City. And while Dan is what I would refer to as a youngin', he and I do have memories of other people's reactions from that day. Dan, good morning.
Good morning.
So yeah. you're saying your mom took it.
My mom took it hard. Yeah, my mom was a huge Beatles fan. And I think you and I talked about a little bit texting last night. I mean, I remember my aunt telling me that how upset my mother was that she went into her bedroom for like two days when Kennedy got shot. You know, she's an Irish Catholic from the south side of Chicago, and Kennedy was everything of that. And in my mom's music world, the Beatles were everything to her. And to see John Lennon go down, it was just like, you know, Kennedy, then Robert Kennedy, and now John Lennon. It's like, I just remember just her constantly questioning where the world's going with that, you know.
And then, unfortunately, after that, not too much longer after that, President Reagan and then Pope John Paul had been shot and wounded. So, you know, it was when I was in high school at that point and was on the speech team. The speech that I wrote up and gave in competition was about gun safety, that, you know, we'd seen too much of this. I mean, you had, you know, the Lynyrd Skynyrd songs, Mr. Saturday Night Special, all about how easy it is to get guns and kill people. And, you know, it's unfortunately now it's not just, you know, snub-nosed pistols. Now it's, you know, automatic weapons that are just mowing people down, something we still need to take seriously. But from the loss of an icon, again, you just don't, much like assassinating a president, you just don't expect events like that. And, you know, especially somebody as young and vibrant as a John Lennon or a John Kennedy or a Bobby Kennedy, it's just not fair. So obviously we do have, you know, reaction stories like these.
No doubt about it.
All right, what is happening in the world of Northland College up in Ashland? What are you working on?
Well, we got a big doubleheader today versus UW Superior in basketball, men's and women's basketball, and we got hockey tomorrow at home. Then we're on a little bit of a break, like the rest of the college world is at Division III. Kind of shuts down for those 2 weeks of Chris, you know, last week of finals, and then the week of Christmas leading up to New Year's, and then we resume play on January 2nd. And getting in a full swing of everything for the winter sports. That'll be statewide, high school and college, to be honest with you. So busy times, but good times to see the teams compete. And, you know, I think our men's basketball team is going to make a move this weekend, which they've been playing better and better. So excited to see where we go.
Then you got the Badger volleyball team looking I was looking for a word other than dominant, trying to find the non-cliche word, but they are. That's where they are right now.
He's done an unbelievable job at that program, you know.
I'll be selfish.
You had family ties
yesterday in last night's game, and not for the Badgers.
No, my cousin, my godfather's, my dad's brother's kid is the head volleyball coach for Penn State.
What's her
Katie
name?
Schumacher.
So. Katie Schumacher. So we, you know, at first when we were sitting with friends last night and we said, well, Dan says it's his cousin. And we're like, really? And the coach comes up and they put her name up on there. And we're like, son of a gun, he's right. It's not that, why would you lie?
Yeah, my cousin, coach. She's a legend. She's a two-time Illinois Player of the Year. Went to Penn State, won two national championships, went to the Olympics. She just stepped off the bus, Pat, in the year the Olympics were in Atlanta when the bomb went off.
Oh.
You remember that? The guy
set up 1996. Yep.
She was just getting off the bus and got right back on the bus because there was a festival going on as part of the Olympics there. So, yeah, she's been through the coaching ranks, and she's at her alma mater, which I think was a destiny for her, with the legendary Russ Rose, her own coach, retiring. So, you know, I don't have any doubt that she's going to have continued success. She doesn't work. Nobody works harder than her and is tough as her. So, but last night was fun volleyball to watch, actually. I enjoyed the match from start to finish.
Yeah, I did as well. And then folks who want to follow the Badgers further can watch them take on Oregon. By the way, Oregon or Oregon? Do we ever?
It's Oregon.
Potato, potato. Oregon. I don't know.
Oregon.
If you go to Oregon and call it Oregon, they're gonna be like, "What did you just say?"
Well, it's like, how is it that people in 49 other states think that Wisconsin has an E at the beginning because they all say Wisconsin? Like,
yes.
Yeah, where does that come
those
from?
Those are the same people.
The credit union spells it that way.
Wisconsin, well, yeah, but that's on purpose. But everybody else is like, Westcott, what?
That's the same people who think that the word milk has an E in it.
Milk? the other one, now we're going off on a tangent here, is that when you meet people from, say, Texas, for example, they love to make Wisconsin people say bag. They think the way we say bag, like we put an extra syllable in there, some bag, and we always tell them to say ice because it comes off as a naughty word. They can't say ice.
Hey, when I went to college in the early 80s, crick and creek. I came from the world south side of Chicago where we called it creek. I get to Minnesota and go to college and they're calling it crick.
Oh, yeah. If you're in Sherry's hometown and you refer to that, if you don't call it mud crick, they know you're not from around here because it's a crick.
Yep.
Never had any cricks where I was. And then, of course, our long national nightmare is over. As I told Greg earlier, we don't have to pay attention to the NBA in season tournament anymore. So we've got that going for us.
You know, I'm going to say this right now. Since the basketball cup started, it was
the NBA Cup. Let's get it right. I mean, this is the prestigious.
Sorry, NBA the NBA the NBA Crick Cup. It has been the pointed subject of jokes on every show. Like Todd's show, your show, our show. Like it's been what no one has an idea of what's going on. No one understands why it's happening. And then you're like, oh, and they also get $500,000 a piece if they win. This is dumb.
Yeah.
And yet, what have we been talking about?
Exactly. They win.
We've been talking about it. Would we talk about four regular season games in December otherwise? We would not.
Fair point.
What's the old line from the old NBC sports president Don Ebersol had a famous quote, "The answer to all your questions is money." And so there.
Just follow the money.
That's it. Just follow the money.
Follow the money.
All right. Anyway, so we'll talk about the Bucks are hosting the Bulls Monday night, and we'll see how that goes. Dan, you have a great weekend. Thanks for sitting in for a little bit here and sharing your memory. Appreciate it.
Later.
All right, Greg, have a fun time at the Laughing Tap tonight.
Thank you, sir. Have a great weekend.
All right. We'll see you on Monday morning, and we'll see all of you as well. Earl Ingram is coming up at 8 o'clock on most of these civic media stations. Chad Holmes is next on Bull Falls Radio in Wausau. Stephanie Miller in Madison. James and friends over in Wisconsin Rapids. They're all followed by As Goes Wisconsin with Greg and with Jane. Todd Alba at noon, Matt Flynn at 2, and Devil's Advocates at 4, Maggie Dawn at 6. Stick around for much more across the Civic Media Radio Network. Have a great day and a great weekend. Imagine though.
Tell a friend what's on tap.
There's a new station in town with conversation about Chippewa Falls, Eau Claire, and the Chippewa Valley.
This is 93.5 The Tap. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Don't let biased algorithms or degree screens or exclusive professional networks or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
Don't change the station, but do watch out for deer, would ya? You know, they're running around all willy-nilly. It is the Krebscast with me, Charlie Behrens, on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Special